Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Off the First for September 7th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. We have two stories for you today, and one actually kind of came up just in the happenstance of this morning. Not to get too much into the details of my life, but on Wednesday mornings, I have kind of a commitment that I do, so it makes it a little bit later for me to do the show on a Wednesday morning, especially now with the kids back in school. But it actually opened up some time to be able to check out a few different things that came up this morning from the BMW PGA Championship, some interesting stories, some thoughts. And so there will be a little bit of a kind of live focus to the show today, but more of a BMW PGA Championship focus because that's kind of the fulcrum for the week in a lot of ways, even though we've got an event on the LPGA in Cincinnati and we've got an event on the Champions Tour in St. Louis. Just because I may not get to this at the end, I want to say that there's some pretty cool stuff happening at the Champions Tour event in St. Louis this week. Tim O'Neill, who has played on the PGA Tour, is a veteran golfer, has kind of been a little bit of a journeyman pro, but has made a name for himself a little bit on the Advocates PGA, a tour that's kind of geared toward helping golfers from minority backgrounds and underserved populations in golf and professional golf make a career path toward the PGA Tour ultimately, but hopefully toward bigger stages in golf, and has grown in popularity in the last several years, has formed really smart relationships with the PGA Tour and their TPC network, other stuff like that. But Tim got an exemption to compete in the Ascension Charity Classic this week in St. Louis. I believe it is his first ever PGA Tour champion start. It's really cool for him. It's a great opportunity. We're going to see more of these types of things. Worldwide Technology, which is the sponsor now of the PGA Tour event in Mayakoba, did something similar for their for the APGA's money list for much of this season. And then the winner of that money list got an exemption or will get an exemption into that tournament later in the fall. Again, really cool stuff kind of coming together. We'll talk about the APGA more on the show. I'm a big fan of it, big fan of what it stands for. We've done content with them in the past, but I wanted to get that out front, up front, before I forget about it, before we get into all things BMW PGA Championship. So I think something has kind of come together. Maybe it's a talking point, if you want to think about it skeptically or cynically, but it has kind of coalesced a little bit around some of the players who are at the BMW PGA Championship this week. I think namely John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Billy Horschel are the guys that have kind of spoken the most so far in public about this. But there seems to kind of have been a coalescing, a talking point conference, so to speak. They don't parrot the same things, but it seems like they've got the same mind, if that makes sense. And so John Rahm spoke yesterday. Rory McIlroy and, Billy Horschel spoke yesterday as well. Today, Rory McIlroy spoke. The European Tour Chief Executive Keith Pelley spoke ahead of the tournament at Wentworth. And of the three players I mentioned, they all kind of seem to have the same point of view about LIV. And the players, the 17 LIV players who are in the field this week for the BMW PGA Championship. And they're in the field for two reasons. One, they're eligible because they are still considered members of the DP World Tour in some fashion, whether that's an associate member, whether that's a lifetime member, is like a Lee Westwood, is whether that's a current member. And that's largely because of an injunction that was determined in arbitration when Ian Poulter was among several players, six, I guess, altogether, who asked for an injunction to allow them to play in the Scottish Open back in July, which was a co-sanctioned event with the PGA Tour, remains as such. But the PGA Tour said, hey, we're not going to let LIV players compete in our events, and that includes our co-sanctioned ones, so you can't compete. Well, these guys, these six players, went to an injunction with an arbitration body. The arbitration body said, okay, we'll give you the injunction. You can compete. Meanwhile, the bigger case will still have to be decided. So while that's still in flux, and it still is, all these players can still compete in European Tour events or DP World Tour events when they are eligible and they wish. So you've got these 17 guys this week, and you've got Rahm and Horschel is the defending champion, and McIlroy pretty much all saying, look, to a degree, there's different flavors of this, but between the three of them, look, we're cool with guys like Garcia and Westwood and Poulter competing this week. They have been loyal to the European Tour for most of their careers, if not all of their careers, minus this year. And they have tried to prop up the tour. They have tried to help the tour with their star power when they can, even though, obviously, kind of like pretty much every European Tour player these days, they've come to the United States and played the PGA Tour in search of more world ranking points, more money, all that stuff, as most European Tour players wind up doing. And they're cool with those guys competing this week, but they're not as cool with guys like Taylor Gooch or Abraham Anser competing this week, because they haven't shown the same loyalty, they haven't shown the same long-term interest in the European Tour group, the DP World Tour now, as the other guys. This is the guys who kind of came up through this system and then went to the PGA Tour, went to not bigger and better things, but more money and other things. And so you heard those talking points yesterday, particularly from Horschel and Rahm. I think Horschel is he's just a more emotional guy. He gets more emotional about it when speaking to the media, when speaking in public. And he says, more or less, I don't want you here. I don't understand why you're here. You shouldn't be here. I don't think the DP World Tour should let you. And he knows the potential legal issues that are happening here. So he's not blind to that. I think Rahm is a little bit more of a middle ground guy. He's still friends with a number of the LIV players, in particular Sergio Garcia, who he mentioned yesterday when he spoke to Sky Sports about this. I understand why those guys should be able to compete in this event, and I believe that they should be. But I don't think the other guys should be here, because it's clear why they're here. They are here to try to get official World Golf Ranking points, because LIV cannot offer them those points. And if they don't earn those points, in many of those cases, they are going to quickly fall out of the top 50 in the official World Golf Ranking, and then subsequently the top 60. And once you get out of the top 50 before the year end, you don't get in the Masters for the next year, unless you fall into one of the other criteria, which is basically a major winner, a big amateur championship winner, someone who finishes really high in the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup, basically the top 30. If you win a huge tournament, if you win a regular PGA Tour event, a full PGA Tour event, that's pretty much it. That's the way in, other than the top 50. So if you're out of the top 50, you're in deep trouble. So they're trying to come this week to save their ranking, because if they earn big points, and not all of them are going to, by the way, but if you're in big points, you might stave off losing those points as quickly, and you might stay in the top 50. And so all these guys are like, look, we get why you're here. You're not really here to support the DP World Tour. You're not even here really to necessarily make money. You are here to try to save your skin and stay in the top 50 in the world, because that will get you at least into the Masters. And if you get in the Masters and you do well, you might get into the US Open. The PGA Championship is a little bit of a different criteria. More or less, if you keep earning points through playing the main tours, playing the PGA Tour, playing the DP World Tour, PGA Tour especially, you're going to get in. And they kind of invite the top 100 in the world regardless. So I don't think many of these guys are going to immediately fall out of the top 100, especially with changes to the World Golf Ranking system. But that's where they're at this point. And I think that's a pretty fair criticism. I think it's pretty obvious why these 17 players are competing. Not all 17, as I mentioned. Maybe a handful to half dozen. Probably more close to a half dozen. Yeah, six, seven, I don't know, somewhere there. Let's call it half these guys, just to be nice, are former European Tour players, people who have brought up through the system, who care about this tournament, or at least did at one point, and now you've got your current situation with them. Keith Pelley, who is the head of the European Tour group, the CEO, had a player meeting that was expected to be kind of a hot occasion, that was supposed to be kind of fiery, as it was billed in those kind of circles, in European Tour circles, with the notion that Garcia, Westwood, Poulter, some of those players would show up and ask scathing questions of Pelley and be really mean and kind of throw the whole thing off. And it sounds like it didn't turn out that way. John Huggan, one of the most connected folks in the European Tour side of things, I would strongly recommend, if you're picking a reading list, John Huggan and James Corrigan, those are your guys you're going to be reading on the European Tour, and frankly, European side of LIV these days. But Huggan basically said, look, this turned out to be a kind of a non-thing. It was a nothing burger, so to speak, where, you know, Poulter basically asked three questions, it sounded like, that they were read off of his phone, probably provided by a lawyer. Pelley answered them, basically said what he was going to say, probably with knowing what the questions were going to be asked, knowing that there could be some legal issues related to it, Pelley being very careful, and then no one really had anything else to say, and the meeting ended. So, kind of a non-issue in the grand scheme of things. So, fast forward to today, Pelley speaks in public. He's kind of giving basically his version of the state of the tour address that Jay Monahan does to the players. Pelley says, you know, I more or less, I understand why these guys are here. I understand their motivation. And if one of them wins, and then he said something snarky about, you know, congratulations, you beat 144 player field in a 72-hole event in one of the biggest tournaments in golf. And he kind of had to face a question from Poulter in private and in public from someone in the media today about, why are you letting European Tour players go to the PGA Tour officially by granting, as part of your expanded relationship with the PGA Tour, the top 10 players in the season-ending Race to Dubai or DP World Tour point standings the option to go to the PGA Tour status for the following year? And I think that's a really stupid question. It is a stupid question. And the reason it's stupid is because this has been happening for 35 years. The best players that come from Europe realize there's way more money to be made and frankly more convenience in travel and playing the PGA Tour. And so they go to the PGA Tour. All three of these guys, Garcia, Westwood, and Poulter, are right at the top of this AP story I'm going to talk about in a second. All of those guys left for greener pastures. Now, yes, they obviously still maintained European Tour membership because you had to qualify for the Ryder Cup. That they kind of made that part and parcel of the thing. So, yes, they supported the DP World Tour as much as they had to, and maybe they played their national opens or their national tournaments. Garcia did that, Westwood did that, Poulter did that. And they hosted European Tour events in the case of Westwood and Poulter. And so you've got this disingenuous question of, well, why are you turning the European Tour into a feeder system? It's been a feeder system for 30 years. The only moment that the European Tour ever really put up a fight to be a genuine feeder system was around 2008 to 2010, right after kind of the sovereign default issues with Dubai and the United Arab Emirates that almost happened, and the establishment of the Race to Dubai as we know it. And the European Tour players said, well, now we've got our own bonus pool. We don't need to play on the PGA Tour for your FedEx Cup. And there was kind of this stand where you had Westwood and McIlroy when he was still with Chubby Chandler as his agent. Yeah, that's a long way back. But those guys were saying, well, we just won't play the PGA Tour. We'll play the majors. We won't even play the players because we want the European Tour to establish itself as dominance. You had Luke Donald at the time being the number one player in the world. All that kind of journey of stuff. And you thought, okay, well, maybe they're having a moment here. Maybe they're going to reassert themselves. But guess what? That didn't wind up working because golf's weird and you don't stay number one for long unless you're Tiger Woods. And the balance of power changed. And so it all went back in the PGA Tour's favor. The European Tour has been kind of in this position well before they started this grand partnership with the PGA Tour that really hasn't turned out to be a whole lot. And you've got this situation where now you've got a talking point for the LIV players that, frankly, has been the reality for really as long as I've been a golf fan. And it's kind of stupid. And the talking points are generally pretty stupid. But you've got Pelley out here trying to defend that. You've got McIlroy coming out and talking today. And I think McIlroy kind of goes back and forth between having a conciliatory tone when he sees people he kind of likes. And that happened at the JP McManus Pro-Am where he said, you know, maybe there needs to be a detente, so to speak. And people are like, oh my God, I can't believe he's given up. You know, he said, you know, he's going to give up on LIV PGA Tour battle and it's all going to work out. And I think you have to understand about Rory McIlroy and Jon Rahm to a degree. They're good people. So they're not trying to be enemies with anybody. But when it comes into a social situation with someone they like, they're going to get along with it. They're gonna find a way to get along. And then when that escapes and they remember the reasons that they're upset about the whole LIV PGA Tour thing, then they come back to their kind of original stance and when you don't have to talk to somebody to their face, you can kind of say some things that are snarky. That's just how it works, right? I mean, that is social media to a T, where I'll say something, and I said something the other day on Twitter, and then all these people who have never followed me, who have sunglasses on in their profile picture, so you know what I mean, and they spoke to me like, they would never speak to me in public if we had this the same conversation on the same topic, because it wouldn't work out well for them. And then you kind of get that same situation with McIlroy and some of the PGA Tour players. Look, they get fired up because they feel personally attacked, and they have their reasons for feeling that way. But then you get in the same room with some of the people you know, you spent years with, you've been to Ryder Cups with, traveled on the road with, had fun with, and maybe it gets a little bit lighter. Tone comes down a little bit. Then you go away and you come back. So McIlroy talking today, he said he doesn't really have relationships with some of these kind of breakaway players. McIlroy said, quote, I wouldn't say I've got much of a relationship with them at the minute, kind of implying Garcia, Westwood, Poulter, former Ryder Cup teammates. But like, I haven't done anything different. They are the ones that have made that decision. So I can sit here and keep my head held high and say, I haven't done anything differently. Shane Lowry spoke apparently as well, according to the AP, and said there could be some awkward meetings this week with players he used to be, quote, good friends with. And I think the thing that's happened here has been the kind of insular, making things more insular. You know, you have the LIV players who aren't competing week to week. You don't see these guys week to week. You see them at one-offs now. You see them at a major. You see them at an event like this, a major light event, a flagship event. And you think, what are you doing here? You should be going and doing your tour. The decision you made, live with it. And it makes things awkward. And for all the LIV players, they coalesce around that because now they feel probably to a degree persecuted. They probably feel to a degree shunned as pariahs in broader professional golf. And so that rallies themselves around themselves, and it just deepens the divisions. And until there's kind of such time where people kind of come off of their position, and that could be years from now, if ever, we're going to have this. This is what it's going to be like. It's going to be awkward. It's not going to be fun. You're going to have these kinds of situations. And that's just what it is. That is what it is. And it's going to make tournaments like this strange. It's going to diminish them. I don't like that. I don't think anyone likes that. I don't think anyone's going to enjoy the majors more because you're going to have stuff like this. You're going to have it the whole time. And it's going to be a talking point leading into the four biggest championships in men's golf every year. I don't enjoy that. I would prefer all this to kind of go away. Not necessarily be exactly how everything was before, but go away. And we're not going to get that. And that's going to be frustrating for players. The other thing I want to mention, and I thought this was an interesting story. This had just come up actually before I started to hit record. It came up in my social feed, so I just want to mention it briefly. Claire Rogers, who works at golf.com, and if any of you have ever followed my career for the long term, you kind of know I don't feel the best about golf.com, about some of their management, much of their management. But Claire's done a great job with an interesting story, even if you're opposed to LIV, and obviously you know that I am. But if you're opposed to LIV, I still think you need to understand the enemy's way too strong of a word. You need to understand LIV, though. You need to understand what it's like and why it could appeal to some people. You can't just live your life having clearly defined things that you are against and not understanding the position of those people who have a different point of view than you. Even if you want to argue, even if you want to have a problem with it, you got to understand the other side. I think that makes you smarter. I think that makes you more capable. I think it gives you a better argument, makes you work through things a little bit differently. And so I read this from Claire Rogers. She went to the LIV event over the weekend in Bolton, Massachusetts. She said she was there for Wednesday and she had commitments for Friday and Saturday. She was there Wednesday, Thursday. And then Friday, Saturday, she couldn't be there. She came for Sunday. And I think some of the really interesting takeaways from this are what the atmosphere of LIV is and what the makeup of this crowd is. I think LIV has tried to figure out a way to appeal to younger people. Now, one big part of that is they've tried to make concerts a thing. Well, if you want to go to the concert, you might as well go to the golf tournament. So if you have some kind of crossover there, that's an easy appeal. You might not even necessarily be there to watch the golf, but you're just kind of there. But for the people who are, it sounds like these are the people who yell mashed potatoes. These are the people who yell light the candle. That kind of thing, the kind of bro point of view about golf has been embraced by Liv. They want this to be something that feels more akin to a member guest shootout than a serious golf tournament. And I think there's room for that in the world if you didn't have massive misgivings about why it's being done in the first place and all the money involved. If this were just, I don't know, if this were basically the Phoenix Open. Everyone loves the Phoenix Open for 1 week a year, a couple weeks a year max. But then you might get sick of it. And so you kind of go, okay, well, we need different flavors in golf. The flavor of the PGA Tour is sometimes often too much the same. It is too homogeneous week to week. You have a 72-hole tournament, medal play, no different format, 144, 156, cut to top 65, play the weekend, same time slots even on the same networks. Here we go. And see what happens. See if the golf's exciting. And if it is, you have a great time. If it's not, not so much. But I think that that same problem is going to happen with Liv. If you establish your identity as, we just want to be fun. We want to have music playing. No one's taking it too seriously until, you know, four holes left on Sunday. Then that's going to become stale too. That's the problem. Beyond all the other problems with Liv, that's the problem. But I think it's interesting to kind of see from Claire's perspective where Liv is trying to mobilize. It's trying to use Instagram influencer types that to me are vapid and useless, but to other people are interesting and important. And so they're trying to get those people to connect with younger fans. They're trying to bring in music acts like Diplo and the Chainsmokers. All right, come in, watch the concert, have a great time. You'll connect that with Liv. You'll come back for more. We'll have it in a shorter interval. We'll have stuff that's easy for kids, like the little fan center stuff that they have, which, I mean, they have at other PGA Tour events, but it's mostly geared toward adults. And so they've tried to find a way to maybe make some inroads. I don't know if that's going to work in the long haul. I'm not convinced that it's going to, but it is interesting to kind of understand where they're coming from. And I think it's worth your read today. So it's a golf.com. Check it out. Or if you follow Claire, she does a good job on social as well. So something worth reading today. All right. That's going to do it for us today. I will do a show tomorrow. I'll get in the air at 12:40, I believe, for a trip to Big Cedar Lodge for the weekend, for an extended weekend. Very excited about all of that. I'll probably be doing shows. I know I'm going to be doing shows, but we'll talk a little bit about Big Cedar Lodge just for fun. I'm there as a paying guest, so there's really nothing implied here about any of that, but we'll have a great time. I'll kind of give you the information about what's going on with me personally and the competition I'm going to play in, but we're going to focus on the big news of the week for the professional tours. So we'll keep you abreast of all that. Thank you for listening to the show. Give us a 5-star review if you listen on a service that lets you do that. Otherwise, tell your friends about us. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you tomorrow.